This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct, and welcome to our new co-host to Game Misconduct. Officially, it's Anthony Pusick. He's been our producer, but honestly, I've been knocking around suggestions with him and comments with him during the course of the podcast, and I said, you know what? The guy needs his outlet just like I do. And he's good, he's knowledgeable, and he's fun, and welcome. Welcome to the on-air portion, officially, of Game Misconduct.
Happy to be a part of it, Don. Thank you for bringing me along this journey with you.
It is a journey.
That's right.
This is a journey, and we're going to go through
into
it
sound.
Tonight, last night's games, and you know, we were just talking off the air, just some of the surprises, and we actually didn't mention this in our little pre-show meeting. But I'm impressed where the Penguins are right now. I didn't have much thought about them to start the season. I did not. I had them maybe making the playoffs, maybe not. Carlson addition was curious. They got off to a really slow start, and then they kind of found themselves out west, Anthony. And here they are, fourth place in the Metropolitan Division. If the season were to end today, they would be a playoff team, 8-6. Sidney Crosby, a hat trick last night, and their win over the Blue Jackets. And you know, he's got 10 goals now on the season. It's pretty incredible. I don't know how sustainable it is for Pittsburgh, but when you look at, you know, the Devils, and we'll talk about them in a second, and their struggles, and the Islanders and their struggles. Well, there's two playoff teams right there in the Metropolitan Division that are struggling with injuries and just not playing to their capabilities. That's what needs to happen in order for Pittsburgh, you know, to make that jump. And it's interesting because, and we're getting into this a little bit later on, we're creeping a close, we're a week and a day away from American Thanksgiving, where you see on average 12 to the 16 playoff teams that are there on American Thanksgiving end up making the playoffs. This could be a very interesting week where maybe Pittsburgh is going to be a playoff team, and maybe the Islanders and Devils could be in a little bit of trouble. So we'll have to wait and see. But I've been very impressed with Pittsburgh over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, no, I agree. And Troy on Twitter, a big listener to the podcast, did the work for us about American Thanksgiving. And within the last, from 2013 to 2023, 13 teams, 13 teams, 12, 13, 11, 11, don't count the bubble. Don't count COVID shortened, 12 and 13. Those are the amount of teams on American Thanksgiving that were in the playoffs that made the playoffs. So if you are in by American Thanksgiving, good to fair chance that you are going to make it. And another team I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later as well is Washington. And Don, we've talked about their demise on this podcast for, I don't know, seems like 2 or 3 years now. When is it going to end for them? When is the Crosby effect going to wear off in Pittsburgh? How is Ovechkin just going to be too old to carry the Capitals? And both of them at the moment they got off to slow starts, but they have turned their seasons around, and they both sit at second and fourth respectively in the Metro because of the struggles that you mentioned with the Islanders, with the Devils. But yeah, no, I've been very impressed with Pittsburgh, and Crosby just seems timeless. He doesn't want to give up being one of the best players in hockey, even though there's the young gun Bedard who's supposed to be that next guy, comes up with a hat trick last night. Very impressive.
But the difference, I guess, is that Pittsburgh's really relied on their star, Sidney Crosby. Washington isn't really getting the goal production for Ovechkin. He's still a plus player. He's getting his points. He's getting his shots on goal, but he only has 3 goals on the season. So you got to figure that's going to start to change, and how much are they going to be able to rely on that to maybe sustain this? So you're right. I mean, you know, the Rangers have been great. Carolina's been very, very good. Boston, Florida, Detroit's been a bit of a surprise. Toronto, kind of up and down. But the movement you're going to see, and what Anthony's talking about, those 13 teams out of 16 on average that make it to the playoffs once they are in the playoffs on American Thanksgiving, which obviously is the last Thursday of November. So you're like 20-plus games in. How difficult it is to move. That movement is going to be around the wild card. So you look at Toronto, Pittsburgh. Right now, Tampa on the outside looking in. I think they'll be better when Vasilevsky comes back. The Devils, let's give them a break because they're playing without Hischier and they're playing without Hughes. Buffalo might have digged themselves a hole. Will they be able to get out of it? Because they don't have that kind of reputation. So I wouldn't throw dirt on the Devils. Or the Lightning because of their injuries.
Right.
I wouldn't say that Washington and Pittsburgh has secured anything. So if things are going to move, Anthony, it's probably going to be around those types of teams. But you can dig yourself a bit of a hole, and it's going to be interesting to see whether those teams like Detroit, like Washington, are going to be able to sustain in the East, and whether teams like the Devils and the Lightning, once they start getting their players back, will just all of a sudden find their groove.
Big loss for Buffalo of Tage Thompson, who Granato said after the game is going to be out a while.
That's going to
hurt them.
Time, yeah.
That's going to hurt them bad on a team that's already on the outside looking in, like you said, at 15 points. But again, I mean, you look at it, Don, and we have a while till Thanksgiving. We got a week. There's a lot of teams with 16, 15, 13 points. Islanders down at 13 points. A lot can change by American Thanksgiving, but some of these teams are going to have to start putting wins together.
Yeah, the Islanders are the one team where it's really not because of injury. It's just you're really concerned about them. You know, I'm concerned about the Devils too, just because they're not great defensively. You wonder about their goaltending, but you take two of their best players away. But hey, the Rangers had two of their best players taken away, and they're just unstoppable right now. So give them credit. In the West, you know, is it sustainable for St. Louis? That'll be interesting. Winnipeg has been a bit of a surprise here late. They got the win against the Devils last night. Kyle Connor, to me, is one of the most underrated players in the NHL. And you know what Hullabuck can do. The problem I have, Edmonton, I think, we'll see. They did win their first game with Chris Knobloch behind the bench against the Islanders. But did they dig themselves too big of a hole? The team I'm concerned about, EJ brought this up, on Monday, is Minnesota. They've really kind of fallen apart here. 5-8-2 to start the season. And EJ flat out said, Anthony, that Dean Evason might be the next coach we see get canned here.
Yeah, I know. Everybody in this area, at least, the Fire Lambert chants have gotten loud at UBS.
Yeah, that could be too. Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know, Don. I would agree that Dean could be the one to go. I mean, he's certainly a prickly personality, let's say. And when you're winning, of course, you know those personalities kind of stick around. But when it's not working, you wonder if a change is necessary there. And the thing about the Islanders that's different from the Wild, I think the Wild have the talent. Doesn't seem like it's clicking right now. Maybe the goaltending isn't what you expected for them thus far. But with the Islanders, this is kind of the same core with the addition of Bo Horvat that brought them to the Eastern Conference Finals with Barry Trotz. But maybe that was just Barry Trotz knew how to run their system. And Lane Lambert just hasn't gotten the same defensive production, but overall production out of that team. The change in coach really did not boost them. If anything, it hurt them.
Yeah, and also out west, the big surprise, Anaheim, and you just had a stat on how well they've played in the third period.
Yeah, six comeback victories for the Ducks in the third period, 15 games into the season. That's the most in NHL history, and they're just fun to watch. I mean, Trevor Zegras, Troy Terry, we know that there's two former Rangers there in Ryan Strome, and Frankie V. Frank Vetrano's having an unbelievable start to the season. Beat the Predators 3-2 last night. And take a look at the standings and where they sit. They're fourth in the Pacific, and if I look at the wild card, they're first in the wild card. Mm-hmm. 18 points, only 1 point behind 1 point behind the Kings for third in that division. They're a fun team. They could score for sure, and to have as many comeback wins as they do, it's not, of course, sustainable. You'd like to be able to get a lead every once in a while, but I would say I'm very impressed with how they played thus far.
Yeah, and the Blues, 5 goals against the Lightning, put up an 8 spot against Colorado, so they're starting to find a nice offensive groove there, and it's everybody is contributing to what they've been able to do offensively. Kyrou's got 4 goals. He had a goal last night, so that's a nice little moment. I don't know how sustainable it is, and we could talk about the loss of Vasilevsky, but you know, they're also not scoring. You know, if it's Point, it's Kucherov, they're not getting much else, so maybe a little bit concerned about them. And the Dallas Stars continue to impress. Well, they have 7 special team goals in their victory the other night, and now they end up winning in overtime against the Arizona Coyotes. Duchesne, who's really been a nice addition for them, he's got already 6 goals in the season, and there are the Dallas Stars, only 3 losses in regulation this year, sitting in first place in the Central Division.
I think Jake Oettinger is one of the best goalies in hockey. I mean, we saw it 2 seasons ago when he almost willed the Stars to victory in that playoff series.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of who they were playing. Was it Calgary? I forget who it was. It might have been Edmonton or Calgary, whoever they played. But he played unbelievable and almost willed them to a victory in that series. And when you have a goalie like him and you have the offensive production that they have, because they have guys like Tyler Seguin, like Matt Duchesne, who are putting the puck in the back of the net, very impressive stuff. They're a fun team to watch. You had them going pretty far. in your predictions. So looking pretty good there. And with Colorado scuffling a little bit, now they have a nice 5-point lead in that Central Division.
Yeah, it had to be Calgary that they play, because that's when Calgary played Edmonton, and then Edmonton eventually went to the conference final against Colorado. So that was a couple of years ago.
My memory's not so bad.
No, it's very good. So good on you. The Rangers situation, Larry Brooks reports that the Rangers are not interested in Patrick Kane. I guess that makes sense. For a couple of reasons. Wheeler's starting to play well. He's playing, getting top line minutes. He's starting to score a little bit. And you know, we got a call out of nowhere on the Michael Kay show about how would you describe Patrick Kane's tenure? I was like, it's a nothing burger. Nothing really happened. He had
those emails,
moments,
those lovely emails that we get.
But honestly, I thought maybe there was a chance when Wheeler wasn't scoring or producing and he was stuck on the third line. And, you know, the Rangers kind of needed that winger. He'll land somewhere. You know, maybe he'll go to Buffalo now with their injury situation, and, you know, just to go back home.
I think that makes a lot of sense for Buffalo right now.
It does. So it just never made sense for the Rangers. And we're recording right now. It's 11:26 in the a.m. Rangers will be hitting ice for practice, and we'll get an update sometime later today of the situation with Ryan Lindgren, who did not finish the third period in the Rangers' last game. And Rangers aren't playing again until Saturday. But we'll find out how long he's going to be out. We know Fox is on long-term IR, so he can't return for at least the next six games.
Wonder if Hedl will practice.
Well, didn't sound like Hedl. You know, Hedl has not practiced yet. So even if he did practice today, I guess it's possible for Saturday. But the feeling around was that Hedl's not close. So I guess we'll see. I don't know how sustainable it is to continue to win games without Fox, without Hedl. If you got to miss Lindgren now, because that means extra minutes for Jones, and they'd have to call up a defenseman. So do we see Ben Harper come up and play if Lindgren's going to be out for any length of time? You're already out Fox, and you lose Lindgren. I mean, that's your top pairing right there. Trouba and Miller have done a terrific job, but now you're starting to play, you know, Jones, who's supposed to be your seventh defenseman. You might have to call Hartford to get an eighth.
And what's amazing, Don, is that it seems like the Rangers, in the time that Lindgren and Fox have been together, they actually struggle more when Lindgren's out of the lineup than when Fox is out of the lineup.
Yeah.
Because he just provides something that, despite how skillful Fox is both offensively and defensively with handling the puck, Lindgren is just that stay-at-home, big-hitting defenseman on that top pair that can kind of give top lines fits no matter who it is. And when they lose him, yes, Trouba can provide that, and Schneider to an extent, but there's just something about what Lindgren brings that kind of balances out all those D pairs and makes the Rangers harder to play against defensively.
Yeah, so he's a really missing piece. And unfortunately, because of the way he plays, he's always either playing at not 100% or out of the lineup. And you're right, they're going to miss him. But they've accumulated points. As Dave Maloney says, points don't go bad.
That's right.
And we'll see how healthy they're going to be on Saturday. There's a chance that that Hughes will play on Saturday. There's an outside chance that Jack Hughes could play against Pittsburgh tomorrow. So the feeling is he may return Saturday, and that obviously will help, because he was a beast against the Rangers in the playoffs last year. I don't know when Hischier is going to come back. Did not make the trip to Winnipeg, so it doesn't seem like he was close. So they probably won't have Hischier back. And so I'd like to judge the Devils once they get everybody back. But still, when they were playing with those guys, they were a little loosey-goosey defensively, and you know how their goaltending is. But right now, there isn't a great feel around New Jersey, especially, you know, last night they kind of hung in there a little bit, but a bad third period. 3-2 became, you know, 5-2 in a blink of a hat, and end up losing that game going away. Good on Winnipeg, who seems like they're starting to get their legs a little bit too.
They're going to need a goalie, the Devils, Don. They're going to
I agree. And I don't know who that's going to be. I guess we'll have to just see what teams. I know Anaheim, now they're in the running for it, so it doesn't look like they're going to be making any moves with their goaltenders. We'll have to see where you go from there. But they also got to just clean up defensively as well. I don't want to sit there and just say, it's kind of like the Zach Wilson argument, right? You know he's not good, but it's not all his fault.
No,
you know,
of course,
the Devils' goaltenders aren't great, but there's a lot of other extenuating circumstances that lead to them giving up as many goals as they do.
Yeah, no question. But we knew going in, we talked about what is this Devils team going to look like? Were they a step ahead with how far they advanced last year? Obviously, being the Rangers, knowing that Akira Schmid was the one that carried them through that series, was that going to be sustainable? It turns out at the moment that it's not. Yeah, there's much more problems than just the goaltending. Obviously, not having Jack Hughes, not having Nico Hischier, that hurts. I'm sure they would have liked to see more from Timo Meier. He had a power play goal last night, but he only has 5 on the season. I think you just want to see more from him. You just want to see more from that entire team. There's plenty of blame to go around as to why the Devils are struggling.
Yeah, so we'll see how that ends up working itself out. Anthony tweeted this out last night. Greg Rowinski had tweeted this. Sounds like changes.
Zach's brother.
Sounds like changes could be coming for NHL 3-on-3 OT. Lots of discussions about reducing puck possession, potentially by trying to make half-court rules on circling back in your own zone. I guess the complaint is, and I've called a lot of 3-on-3. I enjoy 3-on-3.
I do too.
But what we've seen, it doesn't necessarily always have the spark that it originally did, because teams just know how to work it. And if you lose the opening faceoff, you're in a significant hole. You might go minutes before you get to touch the puck again.
Yeah.
And what you see is, and for people that don't understand about like the half court that Greg was talking about, is that if there's nothing there, they'll circle back into the neutral zone, kind of start over. And you only have 5 minutes, and it eats up a lot of time. And you look at even, you do get a lot of wide open exchange possessions. I thought the overtime that the Rangers played against Columbus was pretty good. I thought there was some opportunities there. But at the end of the day, there were only 4 shots total in that overtime. Rangers had 3 and Columbus had 1. A lot of times you'll just see 1 or 2 shots on goal because one team possessed the puck, they circle back. I don't know what that looks like, Anthony. Like, are you going to call, like, an offside if they leave the zone and make them give up possession? Like, I don't know how it would look to play that half court that Greg is talking about.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm all for anything that will try and eradicate the shootout. You know how I feel about that. I think it's a ridiculous skills competition mm-hmm. to decide a point in the standings. Honestly, and look, you've covered the Rangers, Don. Of course, you do the games, and you're there pre and post a lot. You see what happens when you have, we mentioned it, Adam Fox, guys like Artemi Panarin, having guys that are really good at controlling the puck. You could hold on to that puck on a string in 3-on-3 for a very, very long time, where you're not really generating anything, but you're just keeping the puck away. Of course, there is the unintended consequence of the situations that we've run into where you see guys doubling back, you see guys going back to the red line, you see guys going out of the blue line. I don't know what that would look like. I don't know how you solve that problem. Is the issue that it's not exciting? Is the issue that they want to get rid of the shootout altogether? Because you could extend it to a 10-minute overtime if you wanted to. That doesn't solve the problem of, you know, just kind of cradling the puck at the blue line, trying to get the 2-on-1 breakaways. But if the issue is to eradicate the shootout, I'm all for it. I don't know what a shot clock or red line, blue line, quote unquote, violation would look like. Because they also said, Colin Campbell also mentioned, they don't want to see stoppage of play and they don't want more faceoffs. So how would that really look?
Well Merrick, Jeff Merrick brought this up thanks to Courtney tweeting it earlier this morning, that there is even thoughts of just doing away with the lines altogether and not even having offside and just playing just a free-for-all pond hockey.
See, as much as people were upset about 3-on-3 OT, I think people would be even more upset. That would actually be what they have in the new NHL game. They have a pond hockey style where you can kind of just, you could throw the puck down the ice and just cherry pick as much as you want. I don't know if that's what we're going for, because then it gets into gimmicky stuff that I don't like about the shootout.
Guys, here's the problem we're having. We're trying too hard, bro.
I agree.
Just get rid of the shootout and have ties.
I agree.
I never had a problem with ties. It was something you grew up with as a hockey fan. I hate these people like you go to a game and there wasn't a winner. You get a point. The league is decided by who finishes with the most points. So when you go home with a point, you got something. You accomplished something. It's not what you wanted, but it's better than nothing. All right? And You get the overtime, extend it by a couple of minutes because I think the 3-on-3 is fun. Play a 7, play an 8-minute. I understand you worry about the ice conditions, especially like some arenas like Madison Square Garden that also plays basketball and the ice is in question to begin with. And you play an entire third period, you get a dry scrape, and then maybe anything more than 5 minutes can really mess up. But would an extra 2 or 3 minutes kill? Like you said, 10. I'd be happy with 10. But if the ice is an issue, then make it 7. Extend the 3-on-3. And if you don't have a winner after that, all right, go home. You got your tie and be done with it. Instead of having a skills competition, does not represent the sport. And I can tell you, you as a fan, Anthony, me calling games and also as a fan, more times than not, I'm disgusted when the 3-on-3 overtime is over going to the shootout. There was a time when we played 4-on-4 where overtime was very pedestrian. You look forward to the shootout because it was something new. It was different. It was kind of exciting. But it's been 15, 16 years now, however long it's been, probably longer than that now, 18 years since coming out of the lockout. And it's lost its edge. And I feel disappointed when the 3-on-3 is over. So extend it by a couple of minutes, and if it's a tie, it's a tie. Somebody needs to explain to me what's the matter with a tie.
Again, and I know it's not your favorite sport, Don, and it's not one of my favorites either, but the most popular sport in the world, or one of the most popular sports in the world, is soccer, and they have no problem going to ties. Sean tweeted to us, I know we're not at tweets yet, but Sean mentioned, I wonder if they should just not switch sides so teams don't have to make the long change in OT, might increase the action and not as much circling back. I don't necessarily hate that. People say that it's unfair to the team that had the long change only once. But you know what? The home team gets the advantage. Home team gets the advantage in OT, and you turn it around the other way, and when you're home, you'll get that advantage. Yeah, I don't necessarily hate that either.
I'm good with that. That's not bad. But again, we can open this up, and we can take your tweets on Friday of what is the problem with a tie. John Winthrop, who is our program director at 98.7 ESPN New York, hates ties. Thinks it's right. I'd rather lose than get a tie, which I never understood. Again, it is about accumulating points. And you got a point. You walked in there with however many points you had, and now you have an additional point. It's going to help you in the long run. Instead of having a stupid skills competition where the checking and the skating and all the things that go in to your ability to do things as a team comes down to just your skill players. You know, and I know I like the idea where it affected the tiebreaker, so teams that win a lot of shootouts might actually get hurt in a tiebreaker situation. I like that. Devalue, if you can, the shootout. Teams were sometimes, when the Rangers were really good at it and Henrik was standing on his head, you almost played for the shootout.
Nigel Dawes to the rafters.
Much anymore. Yeah, right. So I don't get it. So you're telling me you'd rather go home with no points than 1 point? I don't get it. But we'll open it up to the social media on Friday. We'll do our top five then too. But we'll get a reaction. Want to hear from you on what's going on there. So you ready? You ready to get some tweets going?
Let's do it. Everybody seems very excited.
Guns. Love guns.
Hey, guns.
After the Adam Johnson horrific situation and the Gouley close call last night, I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah, I saw
it. Lindholm's skate came up, but he was fine, but he's asking about neck protectors. It's going to happen. I think that we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Anthony, that you know we saw it, what happened with the Brittany Cecil situation, the fan that got struck by a puck. This is an opportunity for the NHL to react to something that didn't happen in the NHL but can very easily happen. We've seen so many close calls like last night, guys that have actually gotten cut, almost bled out, like what happened to Clint Mullarchuk back in the late 80s. So to answer your question, I think it's going to happen definitely sooner than later. Probably not this year, but soon.
And look, TJ Oshie already is wearing the neck guard. Having guys that are prominent names in the sport already starting to wear it certainly helps. I mean, look what happened with visors, Don. I mean, Mark Stahl, thankfully, ended up being okay, but the vision in his eye after getting hit by that puck is still not at 100% what it used to be. And after that, it was started to be mandated, grandfathered in, you have to wear visors if you get to the National Hockey League. And that was an incident where, thankfully, like I said, Mark is okay, all things considered, but that didn't involve, you know, somebody losing their life. Yeah. And this is a preventable thing. I haven't played hockey at the level that these guys have, so I can't say that the extra padding or, you know, the way that these neck guards are structured affects your, you know, your peripheral vision or turning your head or your neck. But if it's something that they could do without really harming their ability to play the sport, I think it's something that not mandated. Mandated's tough, but I'd say strongly encouraged, and I don't think the NHLPA will stand in the way of trying to keep the player safer.
See, because, you know, you also have to live with possibly being the one that committed the act. And I'm not talking about what happened in Europe, because maybe it was intentional and that player was arrested. We'll see if he gets charged. I'm assuming it's a manslaughter charge. I don't know if they can get into his head of intent, but just imagine being that player, that if you were to kill somebody, having to live with that. So you could say, well, hey, you go out there at your own peril. You don't want to be protected. That's your business. Okay, but there's still other people that are involved in that might feel a way about it as well, that they have to live with what had taken place with them. So I don't think you want to see that happen. But you know, again, I don't think it'll happen this year, but I'm sure you'll see a push for it during the offseason. How about Harvey Cruz? Is it fair to say I'm getting a Giants vibe from the Devils this season? Early injuries, bad penalties, atrocious defending have really set them back despite it still being very early. Well, the bottom hasn't dropped out like it did for the Giants. And there are, you know, significant injuries that I think they'll get those players back. But this is why we cautioned everybody, Anthony. I think you're on board as well, just anointing the Devils as a championship caliber team. I thought they were good. I thought they were a playoff team. I thought it was a team that could compete for the division. But we needed to pump the brakes on, oh, they're the cup contender. They've got the best chance than the Rangers to win the cup. And I said, can we get some scar tissue so we get some trials and tribulations? Because that's how championships are carved out. And they lose a couple of their best players, and they're a sinking ship. Where the Rangers, and I don't want to mean to make those comparisons, but I will, because there was a lot of people who felt, and I got destroyed for it when I said I thought the Rangers had a better chance of winning the Cup than the Devils, for this reason. The Rangers are used to being in this situation, so they lose a few players, and they haven't been able to miss a beat. Are the Devils ready for that? You know, and clearly, right now, they're not. Doesn't mean they won't be by the time we get to the playoffs, but right now you're seeing a team that's young, that's not used to being in this situation, not used to being a favorite, and that I think the fire is a little too hot for him right now.
Speaking of scar tissue, I mean, Harvey Cruz is certainly showing his scar tissue here. The Red Bulls, the Giants, he's really trying to equate it all together. And the God-fearing men that we are, Don, you never want to anoint the devil. But I do think that I don't get Giants vibes from this team, because I think the Devils have a stronger core because they have Jack Hughes. But like we've seen with Edmonton, having one of the best players in hockey doesn't guarantee you anything. And when you lose that player, when he's a big part of your offense, it's going to hurt. And Nico Hischier, that hurts. And I think we saw the issues here. We didn't know the Giants were going to be as bad as they were. We didn't see these warts coming for them. With the Devils, we kind of saw before the season, this could not go the way we expected. This might go awry. Maybe the goaltending isn't as good as it showed in the playoffs. So I think that the Devils can be better, and I think that they can improve and turn this season around. I don't necessarily think that this is going to be bottom falls out, fire Lindy Ruff again after just sending him to an extension. So I don't know if it's exactly Devils to Giants.
No, I don't think so either. But listen, I can understand his panic because of the teams that he roots for. Adam asks, if the Devils' goaltending continues to struggle the way it has, could you see Saros be a deadline target if Nashville continues to fall out of it? Also, how do you like a fit with Nikita Zadorov in New Jersey? Well, I think it's too early to start saying these teams are out of it. Now, Zadorov just signed, a one-year deal, so he's a free agent, so that could be possible. I just looked it up. So, UC Soros is not a bad cap hit. It's only a $5 million cap hit.
That's unbelievable.
After next year. So they have him for the 24-25 season. Then he becomes a free agent. I don't know why Nashville would do that. He's affordable. They have him for another year. It's a nice thought. Now, Zadorov's interesting.
I don't think Trotz is in teardown mode yet.
No.
I mean, I know they're 5-10, but I don't think he's trying to really bottom this out.
If you got an affordable goaltender, Anthony, then he could be a part of the rebuild. You know, so
then
you go into next year knowing that, hey, I've got one of the best goaltenders in the NHL, and it'll make the rebuild a little bit easier. Dean Kelly says, would you put Heedle at the second line or third line when he returns from injury?
Is this because of how good Trocheck has looked on the Lof-Panarin line?
Yes, I would think. And you can reunite Kako with Heedle by having him be the third line. I think he's the third line center until proven otherwise. You're not going to mess with I know Zibanejad's struggling a bit, but you're not messing with the top line. And the way Trocheck is playing on the second line, I would think Heedle fits better on the third line.
And look, I know we love the numbers, but that's the second and third line are two pretty balanced lines then. Not that they weren't balanced before, but I told you, Don, off the air, that third line of Cooley, Trocheck, and Wheeler to me was just odd. Like, I know the Rangers were playing well, and they were generating some chances with that line, but that line to me just didn't... There was something about it that wasn't really clicking. You basically have Kid Line 2.0. You get Cooley, Heedle, and Kako together, and I know that the Heedle and Kako you can't really call kids anymore. They've been in this league for what seems like forever. But, I mean, the Heedle-Kako connection is obviously something that's very strong. Lafreniere has found a home on that second line. Maybe Cooley benefits from having a dynamic center like Heedle, where Trocheck fit a little bit better with Panarin. I say, yeah, put him back on the third line for now, and you kind of, as Laviolette, you can kind of look at all those lines and say, who's playing the best? And he's been fine to do that and say, this is the line that's going to get more minutes today. This is the line that's going to get more minutes next game. I don't hate that at all.
Islanders Mets Jets fan says, how long until Lane Lambert gets fired? Let's see how this trip plays out. What is it? Calgary, Vancouver, Seattle. So I got some tough... If they don't win a game here, or if the bottom drops out, I could see them coming back to Nassau with a different head coach.
Yeah, I mean, look, like I said, I don't know if Lambert... I don't know if Lambert's necessarily the issue. I think that this roster was what it was because of the way Barry Trotz implemented his defensive system. You see it with Laviolette with the Rangers and what a difference it makes with just not even that many different players, but just a system and what it could do. I mean, Matt Barzell's got 2 goals. Bo Horvat's got 4 assists. Barzell leads the team with... Is that right? Barzell leads the... Oh, no, last 5 games, Barzell has 4 points. Those are the last 5 games. This new NHL app, Don, I got to tell you.
Thank you. Thank you for saying... I don't know what... There's a lot of bad ideas.
And this is one of them.
And this is definitely one of them. I honestly, and I'm not saying that, again, it's going to come from a place of bias because you know how big a hockey fan I am.
Yeah.
But I have been forced, because of the job that I have... I shouldn't say forced, but I have all the apps of the 4 major leagues.
As you should.
That we cover.
Why not?
And I always thought the NHL's was the best.
I agree.
I really did. I'm horrified by the NBA site. I'm horrified by the NFL site.
Yeah, it's bad.
They don't function as well. They're not aesthetically pleasing. It's not easy to navigate. Baseball and hockey, and they were owned by the same company, were the best. Yep. And I haven't taken a look yet if they're going to mess with the baseball app after this now too, but what are you doing? I'm disgusted by just the way the scores are presented. There used to be a time that right there would tell you who scored the goal with the assist, the number of goal. That doesn't pop up half the time. It's a struggle to find where the box score, the game sheet is, and the report, roster report.
Oh, yeah.
It's very difficult to navigate. And my theory on all this stuff is that we don't want to squelch people and their ideas. So we go into a meeting, and then somebody raises their hand and says, I've got an idea for the app. And they're like, let's hear it. And they don't want to discourage the kid. He's new. They like his idea. They implement it, and then they end up sticking with it. It's the comparison I always bring up is, why do the Yankees always have to, when there's 2 strikes, play the stupid whale? Garrett Cole doesn't like it. You know, why? Because somebody's probably came up with the idea, and they don't want to hurt his feelings by taking it away.
But
because
it's
all participation trophies now, and that's the way it works like in business. Well, we don't want to kill the kid. He had an idea. Yeah, it's god-awful, but if we tell him it's god-awful, then we'll discourage him, and he might quit and become homeless. I don't know what they're thinking.
But yeah, to answer the actual question, because I sidetracked us and I apologize, yeah, I think that if they don't win a game here, even if I don't think that changing the coach is going to change much about that this roster isn't really what it used to be, and the Pelech-Pulak tandem, which was one of the best in hockey, has kind of fallen off a little bit, and that was a mark on Barry Trotz of just how good he made that defense. I could see a change happening, maybe to get a little bit of a spark. I mean, look, if Jay Woodcroft can get fired with two of the best players in hockey, Lane Lambert can get fired because it doesn't seem like they have a whole lot of structure.
And I'll tell you, if you take a look at Lou's history, he's got no problem firing coaches. He won three cups in New Jersey with three different head coaches.
Right.
He fired Robbie Fatorik with eight games left in the season, and they won the cup that year with Larry Robinson. He's not afraid to pull the trigger. I'll tell you what, if he doesn't pull the trigger, I think it's more of, I don't think it's his fault, and I don't think anybody can fix the situation. Almost taking a knee.
It's kind of where I'm leaning.
Rather than, I think Lambert's the guy. Because Lou will change if he believes the change will work. If he doesn't make the change, he believes the change won't work. And it's not exactly a vote of confidence to Lambert. More of, like, I don't have the team. I don't have the roster.
Who am I to question Lou? I mean, he's forgotten more hockey than I'll ever know in my life. But this is a roster that really hasn't had a lot of turnover in the, again, back to the Barry Trotz era. Since Barry Trotz left, there hasn't been a whole lot of turnover, and they've regressed, not improved. So I don't know whether he's thinking that guys like Wahlstrom are just going to magically get into the first round draft pick, you know, level that they thought that they were going to get when they drafted him, or they expected more out of the people they got. I know Bo Horvat was expected to be the guy. I mean, Matt Barzal, I feel like, is the only consistent scorer on that team, and he just hasn't had somebody to feed him the puck since he's been in this league. Does this sound familiar? John Tavares, anybody? I don't know. And you might be right, Don. If you don't think, and kind of where I'm leaning, that I don't think that changing the coach is going to change much, maybe Lou just kind of sticks it out and sees what he can get at the deadline.
Yeah, and he does. He's got a history of making moves. You mentioned the Horvat with the Devils. He brought in players like Andrechuk and Gilmore and McGillney. If he believes he's got a team that can do it, he will make the moves. If he doesn't believe it, he's not gonna go fishing. He's not gonna throw a Hail Mary. That's not the kind of general manager he is. So, if I'm an Islander fan listening to this podcast, the longer Lane Lambert stays the head coach, the more I think you should be convinced that it's not your year. Okay, and that it's not going to happen. He's going to try to go through with what he has and then make the necessary changes next year. I think the better question is, how long do the powers that be with the Islanders, like Ledecky, stick with Lou? You know, he's not a spring chicken. I think he's already 80. You know, and if it's another lost season, bounced out of the first round last year, no playoffs this year, now you're distancing yourself from the third rounds that you went back-to-back in the bubble and during the COVID year. And do they decide maybe we need another face here to run this franchise? So I love Lou. I do. I think he's brilliant. He's obviously in the Hall of Fame. But it doesn't mean that everybody gets to be Brian Cashman. You don't have a job for life. And certainly he hasn't done enough on the island to
maybe Lou will
warrant
go scorched
never
earth.
Being touched.
Maybe Lou will go scorched earth and say that everybody is wrong and the system we have is great.
It'll be proven out and maybe he'll end up being right, and the team will sneak in and make a run, and we'll see. But I'm not feeling it right now. They're awful in the third period, and now they're on a hell road trip that define the Rangers season by having that success. And already you've got a loss to the Oilers, and now you've got
gonna have to score against this Canucks team tonight. You ain't gonna be winning this game 2-1.
Canucks are good.
And listen, that's not a knock on Ilya Sorokin. He's one of the best goalies in the league. But you're not going to win this. It's very unlikely, I would say, that you're going to win this game 2-1 tonight.
This is not the era in which goaltending is enough. You know, if given the choice of having a stud team and an average goaltender or a top flight goalie with an average roster and an amazing goaltender, I'm gonna take the former. Because you're seeing it with the Islanders. Sorokin might be the best goaltender in the league. Not enough. You got to score. You have to score in this league. Now the Islanders got back to back. Vancouver tonight, Seattle tomorrow.
Oy.
So that's rough. The games tonight: Flyers at the Hurricanes, Oilers home for the Kraken. I believe that's the second of back to backs. The home and home there. Ducks and the Avalanche. That's an attractive game. You know,
yes,
there's goals to be had against the Avalanche, especially if Georgiev's between the pipes, and as you mentioned, the Islanders.
What's ESPN bet have for that over? I got to see something. You could do that, Don. I can't bet on that, but you can. On NHL, on ESPN bet, I should say.
I can?
Yes, you can. In Jersey, you can. Over under 6.5 minus 110. No juice there.
No juice.
6.5 for Islanders Canucks. See, even they think that there's going to be a lot of goals in that game tonight.
Hmm.
ESPN bet, New Jersey. Get the app.
if you're betting the over on the Canuck Islander game, then you're betting the Canucks to win and to probably cover, I would think. Islanders win that game, it just reeks of 2-1. And if the Canucks win, it'll be 6-3. So mark that down on your calendar. So this was fun, man. I'm looking forward to doing it on Friday.
I'll talk to you soon, Don.
And I will see you and talk to you soon on the Michael Kay Show. If you want to get in touch with us, the best way to do that, at Don LaGreca, at hashtag game misconduct, or if you got an issue with me, then you can always tweet at Anthony Pusick. That's at Anthony Pusick. See, that's so great. That's what's so, and just to spell Pusick, it's P-U-C-I-K.
That's right.
Because there is an I in puck when we're talking about Pusick. That, you know, I love these underscores and no. At Don LaGreca and at Anthony Pusick. You know why? Because those are our names, and that's the best way to be able to communicate with people is through being having names.
That's D-O-M LaGreca. D-O-M as in Mary.
No, it's D-O-N. Don't start trouble.
N. Got it.
N as in Nancy. N as in Niners. And
nice. Very nice.
All right. We'll talk to you again on Friday. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.